This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Ayatollah Khomeini. In 1963, the Shah was in power. The world was looking to the Cold War to define the future. And Khomeini, born 1900, said this. Israel, quote, wishes to seize your economy, to destroy your trade and agriculture, and to appropriate your wealth, leaving this country without. I turn to Benham Bentaleblou of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing most recently in The Atlantic magazine, answering the question, what does it mean when Iranians chant death to Israel? Benham, a very good evening to you. 1963, the now deceased Ayatollah threatening Israel, saying that it is stealing from Iran. Where did that come from, his commitment? Where did he learn to talk like this? Because we see it echoed over the last 60, now close to 70 years. Good evening to you.
Very good evening to you, John. You ask a very important question about the principles of the men who made the Islamic Republic. And let's make no mistake, lines like that which you just read, came from sermons by Ayatollah Khomeini, who increasingly gained prominence in some clerical opposition circles in the late 50s and early 60s, but really had cut his teeth being an agent of anti-modernism as early as the 40s, trying to refute some Persian nationalist and modernist writers in between the father and son part of the Pahlavi dynasty, the late 30s, early 40s. Khomeini essentially cut his teeth on being anti-American, anti-Western, anti-modern, anti-Zionist, anti-Semitist, all at the same time. And that time period you mentioned, 1963, is quite pivotal for the changing face of the Iranian government and also the Iranian polity, because that was when the White Revolution happened. That's the land reform program, popular emancipation program, universal suffrage, universal literacy program. Many of these things, that some of which were supported by America, some of which were supported by the Shah himself, but almost entirely was opposed by Khomeini. And that line comes from a larger speech where he's opposing these sweeping measures from the state. And even earlier in that same year, when he's asking about the Shah's intentions for these sweeping, modernizing, society-changing moves, he asks, is the Shah Israeli? And this is obviously meant to be a pejorative question.
We go to 1971, again from your essay in The Atlantic. This is in Khomeini's book, Islamic Government. If the rulers of the Muslim countries truly represented the believers and enacted God's ordinances, they would set aside their petty differences, abandon their subversive and divisive activities, and join together like the fingers of one hand. Then a handful of wretched Jews, he speaks, the agents of America, Britain, and other foreign powers, would never have been able to accomplish what they have, no matter how much support they enjoyed from America and Britain. So now he's putting America and Israel's and Jews together with Britain. These are the fears that he's preaching. Did it have an audience in 71?
Increasingly it grew to have an audience for many different reasons. But ultimately, this is a story and a narrative we've heard before, that Jews and then Israel itself is not endogenous or part of the region. It's a colonial construct. It's a Western imposition on Muslim lands. It's usurped Muslim territory. And that portion that you read from, which became put into the book called Islamic Government and later was translated after the revolution, I would say, he essentially tried to position not just his theory of what Ayatollah Khomeini, his theory of Islamic government, of the guardianship of the jurist, which in some weird way combines elements of the Quran with elements of Plato, with hyper kind of authoritarianism, a paternal Islamist authoritarianism, into one kind of government system, but ultimately tries to position Iran as not just a state, but the medium for which Islamist values will be defended. And those who saw their, or framed, I should say, their opposition to the Shah societally as from the traditional sector, from the religious sector, rather than the political emancipation or the economic sector, meaning if you didn't have an economic grievance with your status in life, and if you didn't have a political grievance with the society but you really had a social grievance about the emancipation of women, about the declining face of faith, although that is debated at that time. Increasingly, in the absence of nationalist or leftist opposition that was nonviolent, Khomeini kind of tried to usurp all these other movements. And it's essentially why a broad coalition that brought about the 1979 revolution essentially collapses. And the hardest of the hardliners in the years right after the revolution spew such rhetoric, act on such rhetoric, and establish a regime whose raison d'etre is not the defense of the national interests or the Iranian public good or defending all the people who made the revolution, but in reality, speaking like this and putting their money where their mouth is and exporting revolution and all the ideas that created this.
Khomeini dies in 1989, but his successor, now the Ayatollah, in 2001, there is evidence proving that the Zionists had close ties with the German Nazis. Is this rewarded in Iran over the last 60, 70 years, making these things up and asserting them? Does that sustain the ideology they're preaching?
No, I think the most important thing that sustains this ideology and really is sustaining the Islamic Republic is hard power. This is the currency of confidence and the type of political parlance that exists between the Islamist authoritarian elite, whether you come from a clerical family, but you yourself are not a cleric, or, for instance, an ultra hardline IRGC background. For instance, you've served in the Iran-Iraq war and your worldview is shaped by that. Those are views largely shared by that sector of society. These are not social views. And in the essay, I go to great lengths to say how the very broadly protesting Iranian populace, particularly from 2017 to present, takes a very nationalist over Islamist interpretation and even critiques and chides the Islamic Republic for the export of the revolution and the anti-Westernism and the anti-Israel and anti-Semitic sentiments, both in word and in deed, of the regime's foreign policy. When they say not Gaza, not Lebanon, my life for Iran, that's basically the Iranian people saying Iran first, for lack of a better term. So it's not rewarded, but this is the currency. This is the political parlance of the country's elites. And as we've seen quite publicly, they put their money where their mouth is and acted on this. So when people think that it was just Ahmadinejad who in 2005 said one statement that may have been mistranslated and that the Islamic Republic is not the kind of regime which we all know it to be, that is a fallacy. That divorces Ahmadinejad from who he was and the values that he inherited from this regime and its founder and the successor of its founder, Ayatollah Khamenei.
The question you ask in your essay, what does Iran mean when it says death to Israel? It means death to Israel. And I take it that these younger people who are now the IRGC, they don't know another world. That's their cosmology. Is that how to understand this, Benham?
Well, when these elites have been saying it for 70 years, from the Iranian government, it's only been a 43-year issue, but that's 43 years too many for a regime to be exporting this kind of vitriol and exporting its revolution like this. But do the IRGC, which is the Praetorian Guard, the military establishment, believe this? Absolutely, they believe this. They act on it. And, you know, we're interestingly moving to an era when the greatest check against this was America. For instance, in the 1980s, the IRGC came across short and very quickly American military power in the Persian Gulf at the tail end of the Iran-Iraq war. The older IRGC generals remember that American power at the American border of the region has a very hard buffer. When you look at the way the U.S.-Iran competition and the U.S.-Israel competition, and the Israel-Iran competition, I should say, has morphed over the past few decades, and but particularly since the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the new generation of IRGC elite also harbors that worldview you mentioned, but that reality is different. And in fact, they see their foreign and security policy as ascendant in places like Iraq and Syria, where that hard buffer is no longer there. And with the removal of that hard buffer, the slow, steady ejection of America from the region, they will be able to act on their ideology, act on their impulse, and actually move towards doing exactly what you said, which is the death to Israel sloganeering, not just being sloganeering, them actually being able to act on it.
And the suspect nuclear weapons program, is this part of the belief that it's the nuclear weapon that will bring death to Israel? Do they talk that practically?
I don't see it that practically. If we do try to read between the lines and thread the needle on the nuclear program, deterrence is always the main issue here. However, that shouldn't be cause for putting your feet up and trying to not stop this program. Deterrence means that the Islamic Republic would be ensured, that the Islamic Republic would have not just a Muslim bomb, but the Shiite bomb, and also allow the things that have sustained its anti-American and anti-Israel foreign security policy to continue, grow in lethality, quantity and quantity, the proxies, the arms, the drones, the missiles, the militias, all that can grow so that the slow, steady death to Israel can come about by other means. You know, you've seen Khamenei, for instance, talk about a demographically stacked referendum where you bring back the Palestinians and you hold a vote, and ultimately whoever comes back there at the tail end of that would decide what to do with the residents of Israel. I'm sure a nuclear umbrella by the Islamic Republic would essentially be the government of the Islamic Republic trying to slowly put a knife to the neck at the of the Jewish state. Ben, so there's lots of nightmare scenarios here, but ultimately this regime has put its money where its mouth is, and a nuclear program and a nuclear weapon, I should say, will allow them to act even more so on those impulses.
Ben and Ben Talabloo in The Atlantic Magazine. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.